Good morning. We're ready to start the September 1st Human Services, Health and Education Committee meeting to order. Just a couple housekeeping issues. Please make sure your microphones are turned on. We're not sure that they have been turned on, and also speak into the microphone when you wish to speak. Okay, Mike, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America.
Join the meeting.
One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. This morning, we'd like to welcome Brandon Buter, and he's a certified recovery peer advocate with AIM. Good morning, Brandon.
Got it. All right. So I'm a certified recovery peer advocate with AIM Independent Living Center. And for the last 2 years, we've been working with Steuben County Department of Health, 911, Sheriff's Department, local municipalities for OD mapping. So what that entails is every day I go in, sign into the computer, check the OD mapping program. If there's been an OD within the county, it gives me no demographic information, but it gives me location information. So then I contact Sheriff's Department or 911, confirm the address, and respond to that location. We try to make it within 24 to 48 hours. So within 24 to 48 hours, I'm on somebody's doorstep, handing them the folder that I passed out, trying to link them with local resources to get them in treatment or to just help, be there to help save their lives. And last year, total for the year, we had 141 overdoses with 9 fatalities. So this year, year to date, we have 133 with 11 fatalities for the year. So, I mean, that's an increase of 38 and 5 fatal. So that's a big jump for the year. And comparative to counties surrounding us, it's a major increase for the population. Like, for example, Chemung County has 61 and 3 fatal. Allegheny has 18 and 1 fatal. Albany County has 139 and 24 fatal. So, it's primarily actually Bath area, Hornell and Corny, primarily. But I mean, there's been fatals in 3 different locations that I can think of off the top of my head right now outside of those areas. So, I mean, it's a countywide issue. It's all over. And, you know, we've seen a huge increase in pressed pills with fentanyl, you know, generic pills that people buy as a prescription pill and it has fentanyl in it. That's been a huge increase. And I've talked to the sheriff about, you know, their protocol and how they're going about it. And, you know, the pills have probably accounted for 15% of those overdoses, but there's been the significant increase from what I've talked to people and worked with them is COVID related, a lot of it. So
join the meeting.
What was that?
It's our system.
Okay. To have the COVID happen, have people locked down. I mean, recovery is a huge connection thing. You know, we have self-help groups, you know, peer programming, outpatient programming, have all that virtual is just a real disconnect with people. So being able to open up, you know, places like Skasis, Casa Trinity has started to help, but the problem is still there, you know? So if we've, every time I go out, I try to engage with the individual or the family. And I've worked with families after somebody's overdosed and passed away and tried to help them get into grief groups or connected with resources of any kind. So the folders I passed out are basically for the people that everybody gets them, but they're for the people that don't want the service at the time. You know, it's to plant the seed and allow them to reach out or find programming on their own. The protocol would be if they want to work with me, that's when I figure out what they want to do with their recovery, how they want to go forward, and link them with different services such as SCASIS, Casa Trinity, self-help groups, counseling, peer programming. So, you know, I feel we've done a lot of good work in the last 2 years. So I would like to continue, at least the program continue. And I mean, I don't know if you guys want any specific information that I might be able to help you out with, or
Brandon, could I just ask, what are the ages that you're dealing with primarily?
It's scattered. I mean, we've had as young as 15 up to 72. So, I mean, it touches all demographics, ages, socioeconomic, you know, it's across the board. It's.
What do you mean by you'd like the program to continue? Is it
like
funded in the future, or what do you
mean? Well, that's kind of what we're looking for, I believe, is we were under grant funding for the first 2 years. Okay. And applied for that again, and that fell through. So in order to keep OD mapping going with the peer element, I believe something else would have to happen, or we'd have to try to figure something out to get that. And that's what's brought us here. I know.
Brandon has written the project request for money from American Recovery.
Yeah.
Hilda, can you turn your mics on?
Yeah, that was one of the items that was listed in the outside agency requests for ARPA. So, yeah, and again, you know, we'll go through the process of, you know, you folks deciding, allocating the money, but additional information, because that was one of the items that came up during the discussion, was, you know, to gain some additional information specifically about this program.
Yeah, so what was the dollar amount?
30,000?
Approximately 30, 35.
Do you want,
John, did you want to?
Hi, I'm John Zick. I'm the Chief Operations Officer at AIM. Brandon's program, the proposed budget for the year is approximately $60,000. He does not need to be allocated full-time to OD mapping. We anticipate somewhere in the neighborhood of about 20 hours a week will be sufficient for him to cover what he's currently doing. So that's where that $30,000 number came from. Funding for this component of his program sunsets September 30.
The other question that came up the last time during this discussion was, how many years is the request potentially for? Are there additional grants that you'll be applying for in the coming years, or how does that kind of work?
Yeah, so it is our intention to continue to explore alternative funding solutions for this program. Certainly, we anticipate additional revenue streams related to substance use disorders, specifically opioids and things like that for overdoses. So we do think that there will be opportunities, sufficient opportunities in the future, but we did not have the time. We anticipated this grant continuing. It was actually a third party grant, and we had every reason to believe that it would have continued. And to our surprise, it did not. We got notification, I think April, May, and there just was not sufficient time to find an opportunity. Typically, Grant requests, if they're available, can take, you know, 3, 6, 9, 12 months. So we don't have a specific duration in mind, but we're hoping to find an alternative.
Okay. So at this point, the request using the federal stimulus dollars would be for the $30,000 for 1 year.
Correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Oh, Kelly.
I would like to know, of the people that you reach out to on the OD mapping, how many of them go into the treatment programs, and what success rates do we have with those treatment programs?
It's hard to get a specific number, but at this time, the best number I could come up with that they've followed through with some sort of programming or entered into harm reduction was out of the total 181 that I've contacted in the 2 years, there's been 89 people that have entered into harm reduction programming. So that's anything from self-help groups, NA, AA, SCASIS, CASA Trinity, you know, inpatient treatment, outpatient treatment. So that's not to say that they're all successful or they're all continuing, but I mean, that's a major chunk of people that have actually engaged in the programming after the fact, after the contact.
How many additional overdoses do you think there are in the county that you're not really being able to account for, just in your experience?
So so what happens is I call 911 or the sheriff's department, and we've been able to get all but AMR. So any that the ambulance service goes out for by themselves without another element of law enforcement or fire department, it's been a major challenge to get the actual address of that location. So say probably 15%.
What can we do to facilitate getting that data for you?
I mean, if I've reached out to AMR multiple times, I've had people from the health department, from 911 reach out to AMR, different programs reach out to AMR. If we could get in contact with AMR or their dispatch to who inputs that information to be able to confirm the address that comes through OD map, that would be, you know, best.
Have they said why they won't do it?
No, I haven't had any response from them.
You wonder whether it's a HIPAA limitation.
Well, it shouldn't be any different.
Yeah, it's not, it's non-demographic information. So I don't, it could be that, but they've, so ambulance companies, we've, you know, the health department came to us, and we, every, in combination with all the other agencies, have tried to mold this off of Broome County, which Broome County has the same thing. They have the peer element that goes out and they get the information. And I've spoke to some of their peers and they've had trouble as well getting information sometimes. So, I mean, I don't know if I have a sufficient answer of a, you know, a course of action that would.
So maybe we could send something from the legislature to AMR and ask for that.
It's a possibility. I mean,
it's not like it's a lot of work.
No, it's, and the information's in the database. It's just for some reason there's a disconnect between them and 911 or the sheriff's department. So
it's largely because they, to a certain extent, if the call is not initiated by to us and AMR is called, they have their own dispatch operation essentially. And that was one of the things that we talked about last week is connecting the two systems so that they're working off of one another, which would essentially solve the issue because then our 911 people would be involved in it. Yeah. But since they have their own dispatch, that's what needs to be fed in. So I think a letter probably from Scott or Carol as chair wouldn't hurt.
Right.
And I think it's important to say that I never look for demographic information. So I never look for a name, age, sexual orientation. All I'm trying to do is confirm the address with OD map to their address. Because sometimes, you know, if it's 39 May Street, for example, that maybe it's 39A, apartment A, you know, so instead of me going out and, or I've had times where it shows the dot at a certain location, I can pinpoint it to within four houses, but is it best served my time to go out and knock on four doors or eight doors and ask, did an ambulance show up to your house? You know, that just stretches out it's just too much to do, because I would like to not alert people around them to have the stigma come into play. You know, it would be a deterrent to people, I believe.
But yet there are people not being served. People who have overdosed, people who have passed away, families that are not being served.
Yeah, we've worked very hard to make that number as minimal as possible.
The other thing that would be really interesting to hear from you, and you might not be able to answer this now, is what other things can we do to help make your job easier? I mean, one of the most frustrating things here locally is the free needle exchange, because we are enabling people to do whatever it is they want to do. And then you're also having the issue of used needles laying all over the place. And I mean, this is becoming like so close to crisis mode, and we're flicking on the surface of trying to take care of this issue. This is such a huge issue, and we are blaming so many different things on COVID, when in reality, there are many reasons why this is such an issue, and we really have to try to tackle it even more. I mean, I think 20 hours a week is probably not even enough time for you to really scratch the surface on some of these issues. And I would love to see people that OD actually, I mean, we're too liberal of a state, arrest them and force them to go into treatment programs. Because if you arrest them and treat them, then maybe 20% more of them would at least start the program. You've got to start.
I mean, avoiding the debate over that, I think we've been trying to arrest our way out of this problem for the better part of 50 years, and it hasn't worked. So my personal opinion, I believe that if we had a detox within the area that was readily accessible, that would be the best. Because to go from contact to trying to get placement into a detox out of the area is anywhere from a day to 2 weeks. So that gap, like with ODMAP, we're trying to strike while the iron is hot, why they've had that life-changing experience and have somebody on their doorstep as soon as possible. So to give somebody 2 weeks that's been in active addiction, and myself personally, I'm in recovery myself. I'm a person in long-term recovery. So I've overdosed myself, and I know for a fact that if somebody was knocking on my door within 24 hours of my overdose, I would have entered recovery a lot sooner. So, I mean, we could go back and forth of the ways we personally feel, but this has been a problem. This has been an epidemic long before COVID.
Sure.
It's just COVID has brought it to the forefront and allowed us to put it on stages such as this.
And we now have OD mapping as of January of last year, which we didn't have.
Yeah.
But even if you had the detox locally, aren't there socioeconomic conditions that the person may return back to the same environment that they came from after they detoxed, and that drives them right back into the problem?
Of course. I mean, but now we're getting in the slippery slope of, you know, do we go? It's always going to be a matter of how much is a person willing to endure or work towards what they want, you know? So I've personally come back to the same area and been able to recover for multiple years, where some people cannot do that, which there are programs after the fact where if you go into treatment, you can get housing outside of your area. It's just that gets to a personal decision of people. Do they really want to leave? Are they really ready? Right. I mean, it's, you know, and it's.
But I think it's not just can they get housing in a certain area, but can they get training? Can they get education? Can they get employment? Can they do other things to make themselves self-sustainable so they're not living off the system, mm-hmm. which seems to breed that.
Yeah, that's basically what we do. Is try to connect them with those resources. So if I engage with a person, they said they want to go to treatment, I get them into treatment. While they're in treatment, I'm trying to work with their clinical counselor in the facility. So when they get out, they have a plan of action to make the most successful transition. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that combined with all the programs that we have within this county, which I will say Steuben County is leaps and bounds ahead of multiple counties within our state. It's just a matter of connecting them with the right people. And that's what the peer services does, is it allows that element to come in and allows myself or other peers with other agencies to connect people with other agencies. Because like we were talking before the meeting started, there is untapped resources that people don't even realize are within our community.
Right.
You know, so it's my job to help bridge that gap of a citizen to services. So,
Mr. Malter, you had a question.
Just clarification in the outside agency request was 22.5 to 30,000. Are we locking in 30,000 at this point?
Sounds like 30,000 is the request.
30,000 would be the request.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you so much, Brandon. We appreciate your giving us all
thank
this
you
information.
Guys.
Thank you.
So I would just make one more comment. I think the timing of ARPA funding and the timing of them losing a grant and needing money are just a coincidence. I mean, this is the type of program that we should be looking to support, whether we have ARPA money or not, because I think it's important enough.
We're saving lives.
Yep.
And I will have this folder here if anybody wants to look at what Brandon hands out when he does go make his visits. You can see what he is doing. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming.
Dr. Chapman, good morning. Oh yeah, we need approval of the August 4th minutes before we proceed.
I'll move that.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Are we ready?
Thank you.
Morning. I've just got one item. It's a budget adjustment.
Budget request.
Looking to get your approval to add a grade 15 staff social worker position to our crisis outreach program and to use $39,400 of restored OMH funding to cover the position cost for the remainder of this year. Prior to the pandemic, we always had three crisis counselors, and when the state withheld that 20% of funding, we opted to not fill our vacant social work position at that time. But there's been for the past 18 months, there's been an uptick in the amount of crisis cases that we have. So we really need to have that third position.
Any questions? Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Opposed?
Great, thank you.
Good morning, darling.
Good to see you in person.
It's good to be here in person. I just want to take 10 seconds to just add my vote of confidence to the work that Brandon has done over the past couple of years. You know, ever since we entered into contract with AIM for Brandon's role, AIM has been a pleasure to work with, and Brandon has been steadfast and engaged in his work. He's called me any number of times over the past couple of years. I haven't been able to to solve too many problems for him or spend too much time because of COVID, but he's invested and engaged, and I feel like he's done a really great job. So this morning, I've got a few requests for you. The first one is just a request to enter into a contract with Caitlin Schultz, a speech language pathologist, and she lives in Prattsburg.
Second.
Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you. The next item is looking for your approval for me to accept and appropriate the COVID vaccine response contract from New York State Department of Health. This is the amount of this is for $106,305. The main purpose of this contract and grant money is for communication and outreach to increase the COVID vaccination rate. It is our plan at this point, if you allow me to accept this, we're going to try to take a regional approach and work with some of the other Finger Lakes and Southern Tier counties and together try to come up with some poignant unified messaging and an approach, because, you know, there's many of us who are rural counties. And so I think if we can craft the same, mostly the same message, maybe we'll have a little better luck. Yes.
I've heard commercial.
Darlene, what's our percentage of vaccination?
Well, at this very moment, we are still, I mean, it's not great. First of Bend County, 47% have had at least one dose, but of the 18 and over population, 56.5% have had their first dose. The take rates remain, you know, about the same. Painted Post is the winner in terms of the highest percentage of those who have been vaccinated, and Kenona continues to be at the bottom. Mm-hmm. They've only had Painted Post is at 71.4%.
Wow.
Yeah, which is very good. Hammondsport is a close second behind them, and Kenona is at 15%.
Do we have a motion? Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Okay, thank you. And the next one is another grant. Looking for your approval for me to accept and appropriate funding for support for the New York State Public Health Corps Fellowship Program in counties. The amount of this is $1,383,824. What this money is DOH is allocating a number, or they call them fellows. I know that's usually associated with academia, but they're fellows. Each county in New York State, should they accept this, they will be allocated X number of fellows to assist two-fold reasons, really. I mean, primarily to assist with COVID response, but then just equally as important, it is their hope that it will increase and build every local health department's infrastructure. Based on our population and how hard we were hit with COVID for our size, they are allocating up to 9 fellows for Steuben County. One of them will be a graduate fellow, and the other 8 will, so there's 3 levels of fellows. There's a fellow. They need to be a minimum of associates working towards bachelor's. Then there's a graduate fellow, someone who's in their graduate program. And then there's a senior fellow, and that is someone who's in their doctorate program. So Steuben County we've been allocated up to 9 fellows. The application is online with State Department of Health. Will I end up with that many? I don't know. They're going to hire, their plan is to hire 1,000 fellows for the entire state. If they're able to do that, then I'm sure 9 will be available to me. But whether that actually happens is I don't know.
What is it these fellows are doing?
Yeah, that was my question.
And isn't fellow gender insensitive?
Yeah.
So primarily they would like the fellows to assist with COVID response, whether that's you know, engaged in working the clinics, assisting with research and data collection, disseminating that, communicating with county residents. But they can also, coupled with that, is they would like it to increase and enhance the infrastructure, meaning they could be assigned to anything within public health. If I needed you know, clerical support, they could be assigned to that. If I need someone assigned to the education piece of public health, they can be assigned to that. If I need them to, you know, work very closely with Matthew, setting up, tearing down clinics, things like that, they can be assigned to that. They're trying to enhance the awareness of public health, what public health does, in hopes that that will pique their interest and steer their career in the direction of public health. I mean, ultimately, they would. Department of Health would love it if the local health departments would put one or more of these fellows on their payroll after the fellows program is over with. But there's certainly no obligation or commitment to do that.
Could they go door to door in Canona?
They can go door to door. They can do anything.
I was just going to let you know, I don't know if we've worked with the fire department, but they're doing a drive-through dinner on Saturday, September 11th, and perhaps we could have information or something there which might help the vaccination rate in Canona.
Darlene, do we have physical space to house these people?
Yes, we're trying to get creative, and the plan right now, anyway, again, depends upon how many fellows I actually end up with. The plan right now is to utilize civil defense.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Do we have a motion? Is there a second?
I'll second it, but I got a question. We're talking about picking up these guys or gals, whoever they are, a fellow, and we're going to camp them out in the civil defense building? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. I mean, they will, travel will go both directions. I mean, the staff, my staff that are working very closely with a fellow will need to go out there and, you know, and check in and work with them, and vice versa. A fellow may need to come over to the public health office in the basement. We're going to have to travel back and forth.
I think what his question is Carol used the term house them. We're not going to actually house them. That'll be their office in the civil defense. They won't be living there.
Oh, no.
I took it we were going to house them.
Carol said, we're not going to, where are we going to house these people?
Oh, and, I thought you just meant where is their computer and phone going to be?
Wherever they lay their head at night.
No, they can't. They'll be living in their own little house at night. Okay. Wherever that may be.
Well, I just wanted to clarify that.
That's a good question.
And my next question was, we're going to have to feed them too.
Well, there's a refrigerator out there, you know, they can. That's right.
We have a motion and a second. Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. Sure.
Darlene, Jack has reported the uptick in COVID cases. No indication of what areas in the county they're coming from.
All areas. Every municipality, for the most part, it's all over.
And is it unvaccinated or is it
vaccinated? It's both, but it's primarily unvaccinated. But we're up to 150 breakthrough cases, I think. So it's a very small percentage. But I mean, we do have the breakthrough cases. It's primarily the unvaccinated.
Are we able to tell if it's one of the variants, or they're still just testing for COVID and you either have it or you don't, and it doesn't matter what the variant is?
That is correct. I have yet to have Wadsworth tell me that the Delta variant, that any of these samples tested positive for the Delta variant. I mean, I can't believe that the Delta variant isn't involved in our rapid increase of positive cases over the past month or 6 weeks.
Yeah, if we look at the statewide testing, when they do the genomic sequencing, and then the nationwide, it's upwards of 95% is Delta of all of those samples. So the assumption is the vast majority, almost everything we're seeing is Delta.
Yeah.
And we are seeing some different factual patterns in terms of spread in our case investigations where, you know, it didn't make it through a whole household, you know, with the original COVID. Every single time it seems like once it gets into a household and they isolate, the whole house gets it.
Carol, I have one question. Oh, are we prepared for the beginning of school contact tracing upticks? Because we know we're going to get it.
Yeah, we are prepared. You know, the process primarily will be the same as last year. We have increased staff and we're going to continue to increase staff. We still have the school specialist that is that's also funded out of previous ELC money from the state, and she's been involved in all of our superintendent calls and is a key factor in communicating with the schools for when there's a positive in the contacts there. You know, the hope is, the presumption is that by the universal masking within the schools, which we didn't have last year, that will keep the transmission within the school building at bay.
Are the kids going to be able to take their mask off when they're sitting at their desk?
No, they're not.
How come?
Because it's mandated by New York State that there be universal masking. There will be multiple mask breaks given throughout the day. Now, having said that, if they have a water bottle on their desk, if they're allowed to do that, then obviously they can take their mask off to have a drink of water. But the school superintendents are cognizant of that and committed to making sure that the classes, the students have multiple mask breaks. So throughout the day, they won't be wearing them outdoors.
So they don't have to wear them outside when they're, but during sporting activities, they do, soccer games or whatever.
Well, no, they don't necessarily have to. That's not part of the recent mandate that came from New York State.
That would be a school choice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If they did that. And Friday, to make it official, because obviously there's been much debate around that, and we've had a lot of conversations with the school. On Friday, the New York State Department of Health issued a New York State Health Directive. So that's the legal mechanism that requires that. So schools at this point do not have a choice.
Right.
It would be nice if there were best practices and then let schools choose their path, because what would be appropriate in Bradford Central School might not work in a New York City school. I mean, I think that's really the the hard part for some of the parents and some of the districts to tolerate, is that it shouldn't be an overall one size fits all approach. So it's kind of a shame that they take away some of that authority and don't allow some of the districts to choose some of those. But it's nice to hear there will be breaks and that they don't have to wear them during sporting events.
Right. And I will say, to your point, I don't know if anyone had a chance to listen to Governor Hochul's press conference yesterday, I was very pleased to hear her say that that her approach will be different than in the past, and that this is not a never-ending mandate, and that if you know, districts, regions, counties are doing very well, she will absolutely take a look. It's not a one size fits all like it has been. The entire state is going to do the same thing right now, but as the weeks and months wear on, and if there's a region or an area that their rates go way down for whatever the reason may be, she will take a look at that and lift the mandate, you know, parse it out, and it won't necessarily be the same all across the state.
Excellent. I would like to see us kind of advocate for that quite a bit.
And this is all stemming from her approaches, the CDC guidelines. So the directive comes from the CDC guidelines. And if you look at the CDC right now, all of New York State is in a hot zone. So that's why everybody at this point.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Bob?
Darlene, I was just wondering, of the breakthrough cases we have, does it hospitalize these folks, or are they just under the weather for a few days?
For the most part, they're under the weather for a few days. We've had a small number that needed to be hospitalized, but the vast majority of them fare pretty well.
So that shows in a good way that vaccinations definitely help.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
Good. Good.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Thanks, Darlene.
You're welcome.
Kathy, good morning. Oh,
Lise.
I didn't see her.
How's that go? Sloppy seconds? Good morning. I'm here to request permission to enter into some contracts for qualified individuals. Under the Family First legislation, it was originally put into place in 2018 Federal Bipartisan Act, and then was further enacted into the state fiscal year 21-22 budget for New York State. And so what that includes is that now, as of September 29th, 21, any instance where a child is placed in a what is called a qualified residential treatment program, which is defined as a non-foster family residential program, will have to have a qualified individual assessment to approve that the placement was in accordance with their goals, is the most appropriate, the least confining, et cetera. And without that, we lose federal funding. The state has already made progress with our voluntary agencies and across the state, and has many of them are now what are called 29Is or the QRTP. So that qualifies, because if we do place a child in a congregate care setting that is not a qualified residential treatment program, then that's a 14-day. But again, for the QRTPs, they have to have an assessment within the first 30 days. It has to be a licensed clinician or social worker. They did give us a listing of a few agencies that we would be able to contract with. And another caveat is that they are not allowed to be working in the agency that we might be placing them. So given the timing and the constraints and the concern for the loss of 4E funding, we would actually like to enter into contracts with up to four different agencies. One of those is William George, Hillside Children's Center, Steuben County Community Services, and Family Service Society. And then we would have qualified individuals in each of those places that we might be able to utilize depending on our need for kids coming in. At this time, we don't have a set rate. This will be primarily a Medicaid billed service, but there will be some that will also fall to child welfare if it falls outside of their regular assessment duties. So we're still kind of waiting for that. The state did give us an admin in August directing us to enter into contract, and has provided a model contract for our use as well. So I'm asking permission to enter into the four contracts. Questions?
So do we have locations to put these children and these people in the area?
Yeah, they're already the locations that we're using. And they've now worked with the state to become qualified residential treatment programs.
So they may not be qualified yet, but they will be qualified.
Yeah, and most of them, we've already had the trainings on site for those agencies to become 29I agencies. So it's changed their Medicaid billing and whatnot.
Are they home, people's homes?
No.
They're facilities.
These are congregate care. So these are like institutions. There's 13 or more group homes where we have up 7 to 12 children. Agency boarding homes, those kinds of placements. And right now, out of our grouping, we generally have about, we've been running in the teens, but about 14% of our population right now is in those type of institutions that would require to have a QI going forward. And then the other complication with that is not only when they first come in, if we decide that they need to go into one of those placements, but if they move. So if a placement disrupts and they're in one QRTP and they move to another QRTP, we again have to have the qualified individual do that assessment. I'm sorry. I'm sure you guys can hear me. I have a very caring voice anyway. So we'd have to have one again. So every time a child is moved into a different congregate care level facility placement or initially placed, they'd have to have a qualified individual do the assessment. And they work with the department, they work with the QRTP, they work with everyone involved with the case in order to come up with that assessment. But yeah, there are many complications to the family first act.
There are many process changes that have to happen as a result of that federal legislation. And Lisa and her crew, Kathy, working with the state associations, have been planning on that. We've had a few years to prepare, but it's not going to be easy, some of the changes that that federal legislation is going to require. And it goes back to almost, in my mind, that kind of urban-rural divide that it places a pretty good burden on rural resources in terms of processes for this.
Thank you, which is exactly why we were looking at, given the limited number that are available for us in the rural area, we were looking to contract with a four, because you never know what other counties are also going to be utilizing those same resources that they provided.
I'll move this.
Second.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you, Lise.
Thank you.
Nate, good morning.
Good morning. We're asking to reclassify a social services attorney to a senior social services attorney, and the reason's twofold. One, we have this is an incumbent who actually received an offer from another county, and with a pretty significant pay raise. So we started looking into it, and actually with the duties and the responsibilities that this position has morphed into since this individual's been here, the senior social services attorney actually is more appropriate, which means with that grade, we can actually pay this individual to the point where they won't go elsewhere. We've been advertising for these positions for well over a year and gotten no one. So, this is one of those positions like we've seen in a lot of other places where, you know, we just can't get anybody.
And the other, in terms of parity across departments, this would place, we've done a number of these sort of, or you folks have done a number of these restructurings in terms of the senior attorneys. This would actually put this individual, should you approve it, on par with like public defender, DA, for a senior, you know, 30 plus year experience attorney, where before it wasn't.
So will we backfill the previous role?
No, we're actually reclassifying someone's position. So this is all within that one.
John, you have a question?
Yeah, so what is this person now making, and what is it going to get?
Currently $74,775 and will be $91,753.
Well, I have 82 for the 2021 salary. It's 82,246. I'm just looking in the budget. So then
in the budget.
90 whatever, 90 and change.
91,753 is the, it's actually step 12 in the grade.
So is it 82 or 91? I don't understand.
82 now.
82 now. 91. Oh, they're at 82 now, not 77. Okay. I'm sorry. How many years experience does this person have?
19.
Yeah, it was very close to 20.
How many other positions do we have? I mean, it shouldn't take an outside offer for us to look at positions and people that are in them and make sure that they're properly classified.
No, it shouldn't. And you know, this is one of those that you bring, especially with these attorneys, and we've seen this a lot in the DAs and the public defenders, where, you know, they come in as an ADA or something to that effect, and over time it morphs. And, you know, of course, we don't really know what the changes are unless, you know, the department head lets us know what the changes are. And most of those, as you've seen, when we do look at them, you know, they have morphed over time and we will reclassify them. But that's kind of the kicker. You're right. It shouldn't be an offer from outside. But when any department head realizes that, you know, hey, this person's doing more, or they've taken on more responsibility, we should always look at those. The other thing we do is when a position actually becomes vacant in those exempt classes like that. We will actually take a look at the duties at that point when it becomes vacant to see if it needs to be reclassed before, you know, before we refill it. But again, a lot of times then you're going back to the start to look for an attorney to come in and start over again. So that doesn't always work either.
Good.
I just, it seems like we do this off an awful lot. So I would agree with Scott that perhaps that we, I mean, it seems to me that there's like some kind of a flaw in the process on how we have people working the duties that they have. And then suddenly we're having to do these reclassifications so that we can give people raises mid-year. I'd like to see it that we don't end up having to do this all the time.
No, Burke already did the management. And I apologize, I was looking at the wrong person because Kathy and I had talked about two people. So he was right on the 70.
Okay, I thought I had it.
Sorry, that's my fault. So 74, not 82, my fault on this. But you're right. And to a certain extent, you know, that's probably on me when we did that reclassification study. There were some, especially if they had a significant number of years of experience, that we didn't just put to the top of the grade. We put somewhere where they received a very good raise, but not necessarily commensurate with their exact years of experience, because that dollar amount was, I was probably being too cheap when I presented that to you. But I mean, we gave some people, you know, $10,000-$15,000 raises, but not put them to the exact number of years of experience that they would be in the grid. We can do that pretty easily to go and look through, but
that will, and you might be paying people more than you need to.
Well, and
this is a problem outside this.
It's a problem.
Industries do this, you know, they wait until somebody, and I'm not saying it's the right thing to do, but they wait until like somebody gets an offer from somebody else and they use it as leverage and they get more money at that point. Oh. And I just think it's you know, it's a budget thing. And with the rate of inflation nowadays, you know, everybody wants more money in their salary.
Well, the other tough piece, and to Kelly's point, you know, I think you're totally correct on that. But I do also think that one of the issues we have is some of these folks who get these offers from outside agencies, it's not really even that their duties here have changed or that we would be able to do this. In this case, we were with the duties that were there. But, you know, if the duties weren't high enough level to get to that senior level, and we wouldn't be able to do this. But those other counties are throwing the money at them. And you know, that's part of the problem we're seeing is, you know, when they're offering, you know, a part-time ADA, $75,000 or $80,000. I mean, that's hard to keep up with. And you know, civil service says that we have to classify duties based, not salary based. So that's where with this one, if the duties hadn't warranted it, we wouldn't even be able to do this. But
we very likely should at some point take a look, and we could probably do this without Burke. We can probably get data through Nate's group, mm-hmm. but we should probably, because to your point, Kelly, you're right. We've done this countless times and it's almost exclusively been for attorney positions.
Attorneys.
And,
yeah, I know.
And that's the problem is the market in the 3 years since we've,
oh, Kelly.
Since we did that study has changed pretty significantly in terms of the difficulties. So each county is poaching from each other, let alone each department poaching from one another. So if you'd like us to, it would be a cost, obviously, but in terms of process-wise, we very likely need to look at those attorney salaries based on new market conditions.
Yeah, I think it's important what Nate said, though, is that if others try to go out and shop for a better offer in order to get more money here, unless the job that they're doing and the responsibilities that they're doing merit a different grade, we can't just give them more money. I mean, I was always told wherever I worked that you can only go to the well once. And after that, you're probably going to go down the road.
John, you had a question.
Yeah. As far as county share of dollars to support this position.
Yes, absolutely. It's child welfare. So again, I have the voice that carries. Yes, it's child welfare. So it's in on par with the rest of our services. So at least, you know, 62-65% reimbursed.
And you also have flexibility in their salary budget to be able to cover that change.
And there's also the component, sorry, Jack, there's also the component that it's primary to receiving our federal funding as well, because there are so many hurdles that we have to achieve in order to get 4A funding. And as we just talked about the family first, there will be some additional hearings, appearances that will be required for that as well. And all of those are required for the federal funding. So it does bring in some other funding aside from the direct reimbursement that we get.
Thanks, Liz.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nate. Jack, do you have anything?
No.
Okay. The only other thing I just want to mention quickly, as we continue to work on our goals for 2021, the Human Services and Health Committee has, Mary Parham has published another article, and it's regarding the COVID response for Steuben County. And I would encourage everyone, it's a lengthy article, but it gives you a white paper on what happened with COVID and who was responsible and how they worked through it. So I would encourage everyone to take a look at that and read that. Any other business? Okay.
One thing I forgot to mention when Brandon was up, yesterday was International Opioid Awareness Day. And we had proclamations from the county, from Hornell, and from the city of Corning sponsoring that. So I just wanted to make sure people understood that it's a continuing effort.
Thank you. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I make the motion.
Oh, Gary, go ahead.
No, you made the motion.
Oh, he did.